Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 397 for comics originally released on March 18th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Supergirl number 40. This is by Kay Perkins and Mike Johnson. They only gave a first initial for Perkins, so not entirely sure who exactly that is. Was not part of the initial solicit, so don't know what's going on there. Emanuela Lupacino is doing the art here. This is concluding the Crucible storyline. Supergirl has spent the last couple issues at a intergalactic academy for superhero-type champions or whatever. And have you been following the series, jumping on off? What have you been doing with this one?
I read when she was a Red Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we redid that review. That was the last time I read Supergirl.
Oh, so this is going to be interesting then.
Yeah, it was fun.
Because I thought it was a good issue, had some nice moments, but I thought it was good and not great. And I was a little worried that if somebody hadn't been reading the arc, that the issue just might not work well for them. How did it work for you, not having read the rest of the arc?
The first half, not as well as the second half. I thought after got through kind of tying up all the loose ends from the story arc, I got a sense for what was going on, and it was kind of interesting to see her interact with some of her co-stars back home, and I got a sense of what her life is like when she's not in the suit. That was kind of cool. The last issue I read, it was just wall to wall action, and she was always in the suit, and there wasn't any off time. And this had a little bit of a Batgirl feel to it at the end, I thought, you know. And she just seems very young, and it had that sensibility a little bit. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, and I didn't get that since last time, so I might check out another one just to see if I can get more of that.
I don't think you're going to check out another one.
You don't? This is it?
This is the final issue.
I thought it was coming out of Convergence.
It was Super not.
Didn't make it?
It was not listed as being canceled, but it is not listed in the solicits for After Convergence.
Oh.
And I'm trying to think if there was a replacement title listed.
I'm a couple press releases behind, I think, so that sounds about right. All right. It does say the end.
I mean, we get a Supergirl Matrix part of Convergence, but afterwards, again, while it wasn't listed as ending, 41 was not solicited, and I don't see anything else that seems to be starring her. So, as far as I can tell, this is ending the title.
Okay, but it wasn't originally slated to end.
I don't know. It was not announced as one of the ones ending a couple of months ago as they were going into Convergence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know what's going on, because one of the things that frustrated me with this issue is while this issue wrapped up the Crucible storyline and, you know, gave that a good sense of conclusion, it ends on a page that is really almost like a tease for the next issue, but you can't tease a storyline if the title's ending. And that seemed to be kind of what they were doing, but it's like, why give me this page? This had nothing to do with this issue, other than it takes place, you know, at the end of it. It's again, if it were an ongoing, hey, great way to pull me into the next issue. I'm curious what's going on. Oh, wait, no next issue. I just don't get it. You know, why not replace this page with something that gave the series a note of closure of some sort? Or at least not a very strong sense of to be continued and then followed by the end. You know, it mixed signals. It was confusing. Because, again, you came out of it thinking there's another issue, right?
Well, yeah, I had in my mind, I mean, the reason this was one of this made the cut for us to review was this was one of the titles that was going to still be around.
Because mm-hmm.
I didn't really want to talk about comics that were ending, if this was the last issue. I didn't really want to continue to do that. I wanted to at least look at something that there was a possibility new readers could jump on if it was great.
I agree, and that was kind of my intent too. I was surprised to find out with the solicits, which I think I just went through since we talked last week, that it wasn't in there.
Yeah.
So I kind of think they dropped the ball there. But this is also a character that over the 40 issues, I think we've had at least three distinct kind of takes on her. It's the same character, you know. It's not like they rebooted her or anything, but the one we got at the beginning where she's first crash landing on Earth and is very Kryptonian. Then we get that middle section, or not middle section, but that later section that you read part of with her as a Red Lantern. Out in space, totally different supporting cast, etc. And then this is kind of hearkening, you know, to her being just your average teenage girl, you know, in her secret identity. Which is fundamentally different than how she was earlier in this run, where she had to learn English, she wouldn't have known what a cappuccino was, or, you know, any of the, you know, what's a donut, you know, any of the minutiae of being an Earthling. It feels like DC just doesn't know what they want to do with some of these characters, and they keep trying to, you know, random stabs in the dark to see if they hit something. And sometimes they do good stories. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying bouncing around and doing different takes is inherently going to give bad stories, but it does give disjointed titles.
Yeah, I got a sense that they have their next volume kind of locked and loaded with those last few pages of this. It felt like that would be a take on this character that maybe we haven't seen before. I don't know. Maybe we have, but it seemed like a fresh take and kind of maybe bouncing off of Batgirl's success and her relaunch and maybe going in that direction where it's you see a little bit more of her pedestrian everyday life too.
And I think that would have worked. I agree. That seemed to be what they had queued up. It doesn't seem to be where they're going because they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, because they're not going nowhere.
So that was a little annoying. And there was an aspect of the start of this issue where they kind of finish stuff up in a little bit of a fast, I don't say fast-paced manner, but I felt they could have reset the scene a little bit better than they did at the beginning of the issue, just to kind of get me back into the storyline, much less somebody like you who hadn't read the rest of the storyline. What was your opinion of Supergirl's armor or whatever she was wearing at the beginning?
Yeah, I couldn't really grasp what that was at first. It took me a little while to figure it out, and I thought it, especially the cover. I thought the cover image was very striking, and I'm not really sure. Is it new? Has it not been around?
It's only been recent in this story arc, and if you look at the cover versus the inside, it's different. Gloves are red on the cover, blue on the inside. Again, not a big deal. It looks like there's a yellow outline on the cape on the inside, not on the cover. On the cover, she doesn't have these funky headphone, earphone-y, you know, earmuff things.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were distracting me the entire time.
It's predicated on her having been depowered here.
I'd have to reread the previous issue to remember.
That's why she needed that armor, I'm assuming.
I don't think so. I think it was just, you know, Superman's got armor, why can't she?
Okay.
But then you flip about halfway through, or whenever they get to, that's wrapped up, you know, the seven cycles later bit or whatever, and suddenly she's back in her regular outfit, you know.
She lost the earmuffs about halfway through, didn't she?
Well, and the rest of the armor, because she's back in the thigh-high boots without the knees and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It also looked like the S design here is just different than Superman's, and I'm not sure why, and seems to, one, not look a lot like an S, and kind of shift around a little. But it also looks like a design that would be impossible to keep consistent at various different angles on the character. So I don't know what they were thinking on just that kind of costume design and stuff like that.
The essence of an S.
Sometimes it looks just like an arrow.
Yeah.
Kind of pointing off to screen right or her left or something. Other times, I don't know.
Yeah, if you don't get the right angle and you lose that last little tail, you can really lose it. Yeah, and yeah, you're right. Sometimes they don't even define it that way at all, and it looks totally different. Yeah, yeah, I didn't really pay attention to that, but yeah, the artist might be phoning it in a little bit, cutting some corners.
I don't think it's necessarily phoning it in or cutting some corners. I think whoever made that decision to go with that design, I don't think it was the artist, this artist. And I think they were struggling with it. And at times, again, I think it's not a great design.
Yeah, it also doesn't mimic the dialogue boxes that have that insignia in it. Looks very, is reminiscent of what's on her costume, but not. They missed the mark a little.
That I hadn't even noticed. You're right. There are a couple of places where what she's wearing, and what's her dialogue or captions are in. You're right. That's funny.
But yeah, it does. It goes all over the place. It it morphs and changes. Yeah, I didn't even catch that.
I mean, that's nitpicks. It's not a big deal. It was something, though, that, you know, between the what's with the earmuffs and stuff like that, it was a little jarring. It was a little hard for me to get back into the issue. I like the character. I like the direction they were going with the character. The story actually had some fun stuff in it, but it ended on a strange note for a final issue. For me, this was a B minus. It's above average overall, but I think they really could have planted the landing on this series a lot stronger than they did, and I kind of wish they had.
Yeah, I'm about the same place. I'm at a C plus, and it definitely is above average. And there was some fun stuff there towards the end that I liked. And yeah, I eventually figured out what was happening and what had happened before. So I didn't think they did. I was able to dive in, which was kind of cool. But yeah, there it was kind of a boring story into the story. So I wasn't really engaged with that, the end of that story arc. But there, it was definitely, it's definitely not a bad comic. And there's some definite good stuff here. And too bad you can't check out the next issue.
Well, and maybe she'll come back before too long as some of the other titles that they launch fail and, you know, they replace them or something.
Yeah.
This is certainly not the last time she's getting a title. I just don't see that happening either. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is Princess Leia number 2. This is by Mark Waid on writing. We've got Terry Dodson on the art, Rachel Dodson on the inks. This is a 5-issue miniseries taking place shortly after the first movie. You know, Alderaan, her home planet, is blown up, and this is kind of, she's dealing with the outcome of that and just the repercussions of having lost her world. And I love that aspect of this because Mark Waid is able to really touch on some interesting story beats that way, get some backstory for Leia, how she grew up, her being a princess, and a princess without a world anymore. And I think that gave it a unique flavor and tone and style to the story that even with all of the Star Wars stuff, all the Princess Leia stuff that's been told, for me, this felt kind of like it was going on some new ground and stuff, and I appreciated that. How much of the Star Trek comics over the years have you been reading?
Star Wars?
Star Wars. Star Trek's totally irrelevant. It's a totally different universe.
Well, yeah, this is the third one from the relaunch, and I actually liked issue 2 a little better than the first issue, and I thought it really kind of picked up some steam, and we got rid of some of the exposition and just started doing things, and I thought that worked really well. I read some of the Dark Horse comics when they had the license, and then read some of the original Marvels way back. Mm-hmm. I love Star Wars. So that's something that it kind of makes me curious about these books that I seem to be enjoying them all, and I wonder if anybody 20 years younger than me is really going to be able to enjoy these or will get the same enjoyment because they're not rooted in the love of the source material.
I think it depends how well those people were raised. I mean, you know, seriously, half joking, half serious, because, I mean, Star Wars is almost the Lord of the Rings of our time, if you will, in so much as when those books and stuff, I mean, that influenced just a generation or more, actually. When Star Wars came out, that just changed the game for movies. It had a huge social impact on our society. And I think people that are much younger than us, they probably grew up more either on, like, the next generation Star Trek stuff on TV without Star Wars to compare it to, or the Star Wars movies that was the prequel trilogy that came out later, which have, you know, it's fun, it's Star Wars, but it's a different flavor than Luke, Leia, Han, etc. So if you don't have that attachment to the original group of characters, in Leia in particular in this case, yeah, I can definitely see how this might not play as well if you're thinking, well, she's no Queen Amidala or something. The fact that somebody could even be thinking that, though, is just wrong on some level to me, because I'm old.
Yeah, I'm curious about a millennial's take on these titles and younger. And just because to them, you know, a lot of them don't have any sense of Star Wars. And, you know, that they watch the Divergent series and Hunger Games, and that's kind of their wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they so they don't have, really have a sense for this. And I think that might cloud my enjoyment. It helps because I love it. And so it really fuels my enjoyment of these books because I just love the source material so much.
Well, I think that's true of most licensed properties. They're doing those things to expand on an existing universe for the existing fans. Now, not to say they can't bring in new fans with that kind of stuff, but I don't think Mark Waid set out here to convince people who have a lack of knowledge of Star Wars or a hatred for the original trilogy or anything of that sort to turn them into hardcore Star Wars fans.
No.
He's got a love of the material. He's trying to share it. He's got an interesting take on Princess Leia and her backstory and how she would have dealt with Alderaan having gotten blown up by the Death Star. You know, I never really read the Marvel stuff. And it's funny because I think that was being done around the time of the movies and therefore would have covered this time frame and this sort of a story potentially had they chosen to. And I don't think they chose to at the time.
Yeah.
Because I think they were going more action-oriented and this has got a little bit more, you know, heart and soul to it. But that's also part of what I really love about this. I mean, this has some great character moments, some good backstory. It's got art by, again, Terry Dodson, so hard to go wrong with that. Now, that having been said, I really don't think this is the best art that Terry and Rachel Dodson have ever done. It's really good. It's working here, don't get me wrong. But I guess I came in with maybe higher expectations than what I got, and I certainly think the art here was better than in the first issue, but I don't know if I was expecting something that had more of almost a Frank Cho kind of style, because that's really the Dodsons are of that good girl art style and whatnot, and not in an objectification kind of a way, but just crisp, clean line styles and whatnot. This has a looser feel to it.
Yeah, it's a very loose art style, and you know, I don't really need the likeness to be the character from the original movie. I don't need it to look like Carrie Fisher, and it doesn't, so that works.
It doesn't look like Carrie Fisher, but it does look like Princess Leia.
Yeah. And it kind of changes a little throughout, and that's okay. It doesn't really get bad or take you out of the story, but it's not, of the three Star Wars titles currently that are out there, this is the weakest art, I think. But it doesn't hurt it so much that it takes you out of the story. It still does a good job of storytelling.
Exactly. It's still good art, but to be able to say that a Terry Dodson drawn book is the worst of the three, of regardless of what the other two would have been, kind of a thing, is kind of a bizarre statement to make. Because again, great artist.
I think it is, though. I mean, the Cassaday, I think, is a little stronger. And
I agree with you entirely. I'm not. Okay. I mean, Cassaday's work is just phenomenal. I think the stuff we're getting over on Darth Vader as well, I forget the artist there, Salvador LaRocca?
Yeah.
Great stuff there, too. This is definitely, for me, in third place. And I guess that was kind of what I was going for. I mean, the art's good, but I was expecting more. Because I know, I've seen other stuff by the Dodsons that just knocked my socks off. This told the story effectively. It told it very well. Didn't really knock my socks off. And I'm not entirely sure why. You know, again, looser style and some of that. I'm sure they're doing exactly what they set out to do. It's just, not exactly what I was expecting. It's not what I was expecting either. It's hard to articulate.
Yeah. And this is a 5-issue miniseries versus the other two are ongoing. There's probably less investment into the creative aspect of this. And I'm okay with this being just a quick story arc. And we'll put this character down for a little while and maybe pick her up with another series down the road. That's okay. And maybe that'll give us a chance to explore some other characters with 5-issue miniseries, which would be nice as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually hoping that what they do after this is find a way to do a crossover between Star Wars and, say, Guardians of the Galaxy. Because I want to see Chewbacca and Groot team up for a 5-issue miniseries.
As long as it's very short-lived, I think I could live with it. Otherwise, I really want to keep my universes separate.
Fair enough. I just think those two, you know, add in R2-D2 as, you know, doing the captions or the voiceover or something. It's got so much possibility.
Yeah. But yeah, this is good. I really love Darth Vader, and I really like the Star Wars title. And I still think this is good, but it's not quite as good as those. But it's still a solid B in my mind.
No, I would agree with that entirely, because the others have set a very high bar. This is good quality. It's a fun story. It's just, it's not quite where those others are. I, too, would put it at a solid B. This feels like how I imagine a TV episode of Star Wars might be like, versus like a standalone Star Wars movie or something.
Yeah.
It's got not a lower budget feel, but it's telling a different kind of a story. More of, again, a television style story than an action adventure blockbuster, you know, movie or something.
It'll be the Sci-Fi Channel version of
Something like that. I am enjoying her pilot. I think that character needs to get fleshed out a little bit more, and I'm sure that'll happen in the remaining issues.
Yeah, they have good chemistry. I like it.
Good chemistry, and she's an interesting, if somewhat quiet and behind, foil for Leia.
And it's a good mission. It's a fun mission that they're on, and the story is going to be a nice, solid 5-issue story, I imagine, and lends itself well to trade too, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And it's a story that makes sense to tell.
Yeah.
How did she react to all of that? What does she do next? Oh, now we find out. So I'm really enjoying that part of it. So fun stuff. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Chrononauts from Image. It is written by Mark Millar with Sean Murphy on the art. Basic premise here is
time travel.
Well, I was trying to think of how best to phrase it. NASA goes into time travel, and it's highly televised. Now, what if the space race of the 60s were done today, and it's the race for time travel? Not that we're seeing any competing people, but that's kind of the feel of it. I love a good time travel storyline. I find time travel just fascinating, the potential paradoxes, whatever. This story started strong with a, well, how did that get there back then kind of quandary, and really, in fairly short order, set up the two leads, set up the basic premise and stuff. We're not that far into it where we're suddenly getting, presented with the concept of quote-unquote live satellite footage of the American Civil War battle from 1863. I'm like, wow, that's fun. I mean, the whole concept of that one to begin with is, you know, satellite footage of it is a little mind-blowing. And the concept of it being live, even though it's, you know, hundreds of years ago, and being shown on TV around the world or whatever is just bizarre, but it makes sense in the context of the story. It feels right. It feels natural. The concept, for me at least, was very well sold, and it just kind of flows.
Oh, I agree, and I think Sean Murphy's art really shines here. I haven't seen any of his stuff since The Wake. He finished that miniseries, and I really loved that art in that book. And so some of the Gettysburg scenes are just awesome. I mean, it's really, really detailed and fantastic, and I just love his style, and it really works with this. The sci-fi story. Yeah, the two main characters are not really that likable, I don't think.
Really?
They seem kind of cocky.
Oh, totally, totally. You don't do this sort of a thing. I mean, they're...
Yeah, with the shooting a lot of finger guns. And
they're cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in the Apollo astronaut era sense of, mm-hmm. of the word, not in literally cowboy
Let
sense.
Let me clarify. I like them. I don't think they're likable.
Okay. I get.
Yeah, because I like what they're doing. I like the fact that they're sticking together when trouble hits, and I like that about them. I mean, I love the technology that we have on display here, and I think the concept's great.
The concept for their time machines is different than I've seen before, and I've read and seen a lot of time travel stuff. It very much fits with the modern sensibilities of technology. I don't know if I really want to give away the twist there or not, but it's one that worked well for me. And, you know, the fact that this issue sets up those two leads, we get to know their personality, the whole time jump mission, and that, you know, time travel is not a perfected science, but we get kind of an accelerated, it goes from an idea to it's in fruition and here's that first mission and stuff, without feeling like we got tons of exposition or just the highlights reel or anything like that. It felt like we got shown what we needed to get shown. And I felt that this issue really got a good ways into the story.
Oh, yeah. It did. It set it up wonderfully and gave you what you need to everything you need to know to decide if you want to stick with the series or not. And I don't remember if they is this a 10-issue, 5-issue miniseries, something like that?
Four.
Oh, it's only 4 issues.
With the 4th issue solicitation, it's 4 of 4.
Okay.
Before that, I don't think they were upfront about that.
Yeah. Okay. I knew that they waited for Sean Murphy to get through the arc before they solicited the first one, I think. I think that's what he's alluding to in some of the back matter back there, that it was wanted to stockpile all the issues so there wouldn't be any delays. So that's smart. Kind of a good... That's refreshing, especially at Image.
Well, one of the other things that was on that editorial page was kind of the tease that maybe this will get picked up for a movie.
Yeah.
And Universal already has optioned it. And personally, I really don't want to see this as a movie. I want to see it as a television series, because frankly, we'd get more of it, and I think it could be a lot of fun that way. And there is something about that Dr. Danny Riley, the one who gets pulled in to the whole thing by Dr. Corbin Quinn, whose idea this whole project is, so the blonde guy. I can see that character being played by Josh Holloway from Lost, who played Sawyer.
Okay, yeah.
Again, that likable, unlikable guy. Again, a little cocky and stuff like that. I think he could play the role perfectly. Don't know who I'd cast as the other one. But this is something that it's a lot of fun. The issue was well told, moved things along, really sucked me into this. And I think it's really proof of the pudding that it really comes down to having a solid execution on a concept. Because I love this. I think it's great stuff. I am not going to say it's original idea.
No. It's just but it's an original tweak, I think, to an idea that's...
This is exactly how I think the time tunnel should have been done if it were done as a TV show today. Two guys, they're buddies, they can contact Mission Control, but they're kind of bouncing through time, you know, having adventures.
Yeah.
That concept fits the time tunnel, it fits this, but they're very different things. This has a really good, again, execution on the storyline. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like a Quantum Leap buddy comedy, almost.
Kind of, sort of, a little bit different. I mean, not necessarily putting right what once went wrong. Gosh, hard to say that line sometimes. So I think there's not the we've got a correct time kind of a deal. I mean, here, they're just trying to almost make it out alive kind of a deal. More of a survival tale than a we've got a particular, you know, go do whatever mission.
Right, and that's why it lends itself more to a television show, I think, because if we're only doing 4 issues here, we're gonna see a couple of time epics and then get the guys back together and then get him home, and that's pretty much 4 issues, and you're not gonna really be able to have a lot of adventures in those 4 issues, you know, and so it'd be nice to do some more down the road.
I'm not even convinced we're going to necessarily get them back to the presence at the end of the 4 issues. I think they're going to get to a nice, clean resolution point of, well, let's go somewhere else kind of a deal. In other words, end how a pilot movie for a TV show might.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But there's a sensibility to this comic that's different than a lot of the time travel stuff I've seen. I mean, again, some of what happens right there at the beginning of that last scene, it's like, okay, you know, that's fun. I like that. That makes me want to see what happens next. You know, it ended on a strong note, having really kicked the story into high gear. And the fact that, you know, we've only got a total of 4 issues and we're, you know, 25% of the way through the story. I'm glad that we've had a lot happen in that first 25%. So I was really pleased by this. This was one of those that I think Mark Millar has done some really great stuff. Some other stuff,
yeah.
Not so much, you know?
In his recent history, his track record is really strong. You know, he's had some really good stuff. And so that's why I kind of trusted him with this. And going forward, he's going to be... if I see his name attached, I'm checking it out because I have enjoyed a lot of the stuff. The Jupiter's Legacy stuff was great. I love the what was that? Starlight was fantastic.
He did Starlight. He did Kingsman: The Secret Service, or The Secret Service, which became the movie Kingsman: The Secret Service. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he did Wanted.
And then I didn't, you know, the older stuff, the Kick and Hit Girl stuff. That wasn't my flavor. And so I'm kind of glad, hopefully he's putting that stuff, distancing himself from that, and maybe doing some more of these type of stories, because these are great.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that, again, I think he's writing good comics, but also writing good comics that are easy to translate into good movies and TV shows.
He's got a plan.
Yeah, Wanted needed some significant tweaks to turn into a movie. You know, they had to take out the whole superhero aspect of the universe. And it survived it fine. It was a good film. For me, this was a very solid A rating. Lot of fun. Looking forward to the other issues.
Yeah, I gave it an A too. I loved it. Love the story. Love the writing. Love the art. Really great. Check it out.
So what else did you read this week?
You know, I'm still working through my stack. Alex and Ada was great.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't let our kids hang out and play house very long, did they?
That's one where, you know, things just keep changing in that world. The status quo keeps moving on. And I like the concepts they're presenting. I like the way they're evolving the characters and the story. I believe the latest round of solicits indicates the series is going to end around issue, I'm thinking maybe 15 or something.
Oh, really?
We're getting to where we're not hideously far from the end.
Oh, okay.
Which, on the one hand, is good. There's an end. On the other hand, it's bad because, well, it's going to end. I'm really enjoying the series.
Yeah, I'll miss it when it's going. But, you know, nobody's reading it, so I can understand having to end it.
Actually, how are the sales on that? Let me check
real quick. I think it's single-digit thousands, maybe five, last time I looked. Stray Bullets has another issue. Is Stray Bullets Sunshine and Roses. And it was really good. Mm-hmm. It's a very engaging title, but it's got some violent themes in there. Just know that going in. But it's really well written. Something to check out. Did you by any chance check out Red One from Image?
I did.
That was an interesting book. Now, it had some problems with the language, I thought. The writer, Xavier Dorison,
mm-hmm.
he struggled, I think, with English. I don't think it's his first language, or maybe that was purposeful because it's rooted in Russian characters. I don't know, but it was very awkward language throughout, but I thought the art was really good, and it's the Dotsons on this, and I thought they did a great job on this. I thought the art was fantastic.
That's more the art style I was expecting in Princess Leia.
Yeah. And this, yeah, it's much better, and it's much better here. But that this book was interesting because it just kind of went, it was like two halves to it, really. There's this look at this starlet, this Hollywood starlet, who you assume is a movie star, but it turns out she's actually a porn star. And I thought that was weird. And they kind of like blend the two, like there's not mm-hmm. really much difference between porn and Hollywood stuff. And I can, you know, that makes, I can see what they're trying to say there. But then the real fun part is with this Russian who they groomed to be kind of a special agent that's going to go to America and infiltrate the superhero culture in America and kind of pose as a double agent. And she's awesome. She's a great character and very interesting. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in this comic. I mean, it's something cool that you should check out because it's like 40 pages. There's plenty here to chew on. It's got its problems in the language, but it was really enjoyable when it was all said and done.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. I do think it had some places where it could have and should have been stronger in the storytelling. The whole concept of she's there to infiltrate, that was just flat out told to us.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't see that yet. Yeah.
And I felt that while it had a lot going on in the first issue, it ended at it kind of a weird point. I didn't feel we were as far into the story as I felt we should have been, even though a lot kind of happened. It felt like something was missing from the first issue for it to really be, wow, this is an incredibly solid first issue.
She kept like taking these little side, she'd like stop her story momentum by going and sleeping with somebody. It was really weird.
Yeah.
It's happened like two or three times during the issue. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting choice, I guess.
It's like, I'm not entirely sure where the character of the book is going. It's fun. It's great art. It's, you know, engaging concept and story. But it was not a home run, and I was hoping it would be. I mean, for me, it was a solid B rating. It was fun. It was good. I'll check out the next issue.
Mm-hmm, definitely. We had a bad experience with the Endgame series last week, and there was a Batgirl Endgame this week from DC.
Yes, there was.
It was all silent, so no tricky words to trip anybody up. And I thought it worked by and large.
I thought it had even less story and relevance than the Detective Comics Endgame.
it cemented the fact that the in-games are a cash grab.
Well, they're pointless.
They're pointless, yeah.
It was completely skippable. To me, it was at best an average comic. It had some decent moments, whatever. It was a decent silent issue, but not anywhere near a brilliant one.
Took me 90 seconds to read.
Exactly. There was no substance. You just blast right through the thing. And it was really unfortunate for it to come out the same week as Batgirl 40, which I thought was a really strong issue.
It was great. Another good, solid issue. And that's... The last five have been great. I mean, they've really reinvented this title and I think improved it and moved it in the right direction. And that's cool. I'm glad they continue to come out like that. And they're continuing to be able to do that. I thought Batman Eternal 50 was really good. Great issue, real great, awesome reveals in here and surprises and, going to be a whirlwind last two issues. And I think, this was a real success. This series was really a really great success, and I hope to see a Batman Eternal 2.
I want to see another weekly series, particularly one that's tightly written and does well like this one did. Not really wanting to see another weekly series, kind of like, you know, the New 52 Futures End or Earth 2 Worlds End, that is just a big lead up to some kind of a thing. Just something that's a really good story in and of itself. Certainly I think the Batman family of characters is a great place to go do that, but I really think DC would be better served taking some other groups of characters, be it Justice Leaguers, Teen Titans, Legionnaires, whatever, use a weekly title to go build up an audience for those characters.
But not spin your wheels for 40 issues.
No. Have something where if things spin out because there's interest, awesome. But have something that's got a clear beginning, middle, and end. Those characters are there for a reason. It's a really good story for those characters. It's fun to read, you know, something of that sort. Again, kind of like how 52 was when that weekly series first started.
We have a new creator on Moon Knight. It is Colin Bunn.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our third creator in 13 issues. And...
Third creator in third take on the character, almost.
Yeah, Ron Atkins does the draw, the art, and I believe he did some Thor fill-in issues. I think it's the thing I know him from.
Okay.
And his art is solid. It's fine. But yeah, the character's a little different, and it's not bad. I like Moon Knight, so I'm willing to roll with this, go up through these ups and downs, but it doesn't have the promise that the Warren Ellis arc did. Those six issues or so really kind of set the bar for me and what I'm expecting
mm-hmm.
from this character. And it's kind of really been downhill since then, but still good quality reads, above average comics. Again, this is a comic that people are reading less and less, as it goes on. So it won't be around much longer, unfortunately. So I don't know if we get one more creator out of it or just Colin Bunn gets to do the last issue. But I got a feeling it won't be around much longer.
Well, I think it was a poor choice of stories for this creator to start with. And the reason I say that is it sets certain expectations in terms of the tone, style, and direction that the book's now going to take. And it's like, if this is just a one-off that happened to be his adventure that time, that's one thing. But by having it be the first story by this creator, it's like, nope, this is what Moon Knight is now. And I'm like, really? And maybe I'm reading more into that than I should be.
Wait, the costume alone is totally reinvented again.
Yeah. Moon Knight, I think there is and can be a following for the character, because it's sold up in the 60, 70, 80,000-ish range. But typically, the title usually winds up drifting down towards the 20,000 range.
Yeah.
And often in fairly short order. Most of the time, it's sold 40,000 or less. Actually, you know, 30,000-ish or less.
Right. Yeah, I don't ever remember it being in the 80s.
So, they just need to figure out what to go do with the character. And it's one of those that maybe some kind of title that isn't a rotating feature, but features rotating characters. By which I mean not a strict anthology, not a series of miniseries disguised as a series, but something where Moon Knight, Punisher, I'm trying to think of some other street-level-ish characters, maybe Elektra and stuff, are all having street-level-ish adventures in and around New York City. They intersect, they deal with, but, you know, they're also independent-ish enough. that that kind of a series, it would need a bigger page count, bigger frequency, because it would have more characters, but you could get a wider audience potentially interested in those characters.
Yeah.
Because again, I think that's, it's worked well over at DC. That is what allowed them to launch a couple of books. Granted, none of those are still around, like Firestorm, Martian Manhunter, Hawkman, etc., but they got to launch them. So, I like Moon Knight. I think he's a fun character. I don't really want to see him back in the Avengers or something like that, but I want to see him around. He just can't seem to sustain a book.
Yeah, this is like volume 7 or so. So, oh well. We'll enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah.
Or semi-enjoy it while it lasts. Anything else stand out for you?
I really enjoyed the second issue of Silk. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It did look like it was a lot better.
So that one is the one... I'm expecting that in Spider-Woman to be the longer-lived of the various Spider spinoff books. I'm not sure how long that Spider-Gwen's going to last, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed the fourth issue of Star Trek Planet of the Apes.
Doggone it. I jumped off that.
I think they're balancing the apes and the Trek stuff well. I think it's still a little bit more of a Trek story than a Planet of the Apes, but, you know, Taylor's getting a lot of screen time and stuff. And there was just a couple of things that they toss in there that I thought were a lot of fun. Potential ramifications and, wait, did what I think happened just happened? Yeah, I think it did. That's funny. You know, but something that if you miss it, it doesn't, you know, impact the enjoyment of the series. It's still good just as a surface read, too.
Would it work well in a batch, reading them in trade?
I think absolutely.
Yeah.
It reads somewhere between an episode of Star Trek and a episode of Planet of the Apes, because they had a TV show, too. I think it's a lot of fun. It's a good mix. And then we also got another Injustice Gods Among Us issue. Again, that series is just doing some fun stuff.
I think Buccioletto's doing a great job with that and continuing. That was that 12? That finished up your run, right?
That was 12. I think there's also an annual coming out.
Yeah. And hopefully this time the annual doesn't take place between two issues in the middle of the run.
That does get disappointing and frustrating.
We'll see. We'll see how this one. And then we are getting a year 4.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. I was worried because, you know, the sales were pretty low on Injustice, but I'm assuming they're making enough in the digital that the print is just icing on the cake, I hope.
I would imagine so, because it's on its fourth, you know, year or fourth run or something. And sure, it's only selling somewhere around 15,000-16,000 on the print side. That's still better than, you know, Swamp Thing, Constantine, Batwoman, Aquaman, and the others. A bunch of, granted, now ending titles. But those don't have the digital first sales to also go on.
Yeah.
It seems to be one of their biggest hits on the digital first side, just anecdotally. I don't know what the actual numbers are, of course. But I'm really enjoying it, and I want to see them keep going with it.
Did you read did the Arkham Knight come out as in print yet?
I don't think it has. Even if it has, I haven't gotten it yet.
Okay.
But I have reconsidered that and added that to my list, so I am working on getting a copy. I think, matter of fact, any day now I should be getting a shipment from mycomicshop.com for a couple of back issues and stuff, recent back issues, and I have added it to my DCBS order. So the minute you pointed out the foolishness of my ways of, you know, just discounting it because it was based on a game, whereas I'm liking pretty much everything else that's digital first. Okay, you're right. I should try that out.
Well, maybe I'm sure there's a couple. But...
By and large, they've had a good run.
They have. It seems like a really good formula that they have there.
I mean, there are a couple that are acquired tastes, and not everyone would like it. The Amikami Girls, I think, was one of those.
Yeah, I didn't try that one.
And, you know, I'm not really following the Batman 66 stuff, but it's doing what it sets out to do exceptionally well.
Well, Fight for the Multiverse was a really awesome arc, and I hope they do that again. I hope they do more adventures with those guys, because that was tons of fun.
Yeah, they're just telling some good stories. It's good. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that'll do it for me.
Cool.
And don't forget, the deadline for the preview spotlight is this Saturday, April 4th, the morning thereof. It basically comes down to as soon as I wake up and start working on it, that's kind of when they're due. So treat it as early morning, but if you need a little bit more time, just let me know. And again, please post on the forum so other people know what clips you're sending in and stuff. We've had some great turnouts the last couple of months, and I'm hoping we continue that, you know, going forward. in future months over the summer, I may need to shift the deadline a week earlier, so we may start having to do this off the online solicits, and I can be posting more information on the website around that if needed and stuff. But just with the travel I'm doing, we may need to do that. But again, this time around, it's Saturday, April 4th is the deadline for the previews clips. Join us next week as we discuss Multiversity Ultra Comics number 1 from DC, Uncanny X-Men number 32 from Marvel, and Pastaways number 1 from Dark Horse.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.